The first time I saw her, I understood two things at once. One, she was good, the kind of good that makes managers sit up straighter and coworkers sharpen their smiles. Two, she was going to change the temperature in the room, whether she meant to or not. People say jealousy is childish, but that's not what I saw. What I saw was older than childish. It was territorial. It was the silent math of who gets noticed, who gets protected, who gets forgiven, who gets watched. Attention followed her like heat, and the rest of us reacted the way people always do around heat. Some leaned in, some pulled away, some wanted to own it. I told myself none of it was my business. I told myself we were professionals. But I watched the resentment gather anyway, in little acts that looked harmless until they weren't. And then she flirted with the wrong man, like you can tell who that is from the outside. I had been at Vistula Ridge Logistics long enough to know the rhythm of it. The building was modern glass on the outside and tired fluorescent light on the inside, the kind that made everyone look slightly unwell by 3 in the afternoon. We moved freight and managed contracts for manufacturers across Central Europe, which meant the work itself was quiet and precise and mostly invisible. When everything went right, no one outside our office knew we existed. When things went wrong, the calls came in with that tone people reserve for disasters that cost money. We were a Polish team inside a multinational structure, which meant we answered to leadership that loved to talk about culture while quietly rewarding the same kind of loyalty, the kind that never questioned them. Our floor was split into clusters: contract ops, client care, compliance, billing, vendor coordination. Each cluster had its own manager and its own small religion of habits. Mine was client care, which meant my days were calendars, escalation chains, and people who had learned the word urgent as a personality trait. I was 34 then. Polish, born in Łódź, raised on the kind of discipline that makes you say yes before you check whether you can survive it. I had a master's degree, a steady reputation, and a face people trusted because it stayed neutral. I had also learned something that doesn't look like learning until you realize you do it automatically. I could feel the shape of power in a room, the way you can feel a storm before it arrives. Not because I was special, because I had been caught in storms before. When they announced the new hire, it came through the usual channels: a cheerful internal email, a smiling headshot, a few lines about experience and enthusiasm. People pretended not to care until they did. She was joining contract ops as an analyst, which meant she would be close to every decision that mattered, and just far enough from blame that someone could always point at her if they needed a scapegoat. Her name was Karolina Nowak. The first morning she arrived, the office performed its familiar little theater. People acted busy while watching her. Some smiled too widely, some didn't smile at all. The men were the most obvious, not because they were crude, but because their attention changed shape. They sat up, softened their voices, offered help that wasn't necessary. A few of the women did the same, but with a different energy. Like an audition, like a test. Karolina wasn't loud, that was what made it worse. If she had been loud, it would have been easier for people to label her: too much, too hungry, too desperate. But she was controlled. She moved like someone who had been taught to take up space without apologizing for it. Not with swagger, with quiet certainty. She was also beautiful in a way that made people feel personally challenged. Light hair that always looked clean, clear skin, the kind of smile that landed perfectly and didn't linger too long. She didn't flirt with the room. She just existed in it. And that was enough. I watched my manager, Iwa, glance at her twice, then return to her screen with the same expression she used when she was calculating what a mistake would cost. Iwa was competent and cautious and deeply invested in being taken seriously by people who had never truly taken her seriously. She didn't like surprises. Karolina was a surprise. I tried to be generous. I told myself the girl had earned her job. I told myself I would treat her the way I wished people had treated me when I was new. I walked over with my coffee and introduced myself and made small talk the way we all do when we're trying to feel decent. Karolina thanked me, pronounced my name correctly, and asked the right questions. Not the desperate questions of someone drowning, the calm questions of someone mapping a room. That's when I felt the first warning sign, sharp and small. not from her, from the people around her. The way eyes shifted, the way a couple of women from billing looked at each other and did that tiny laugh without sound. The way one of the senior analysts, Marta, glanced at Carolina's shoes and then at her own and then back at her spreadsheet like it had betrayed her. It wasn't hate yet. It was the early stage of it. Discomfort, comparison, the private inventory everyone pretends they don't keep. The office had its usual social architecture. There were the women who kept their heads down and got things done. There were the women who managed the emotions of everyone around them, like unpaid labor. There were the men who worked and went home, and the men who didn't go home, who stayed late and offered to help and made sure everyone knew they were helping. There were the managers who acted friendly and kept notes on everyone anyway. And there was him, Mateusz Zieliński, senior contract manager. He was in his early 40s, married, with two kids he mentioned like credentials. He dressed well, spoke softly, and had perfected the art of seeming supportive while leaving enough ambiguity to deny responsibility later. He wasn't a villain in a movie. He was worse. He was plausible. Women in the office had different stories about Mateusz, but they all shared a pattern. He liked being needed. He liked being the person who could solve a problem if you trusted him. He didn't raise his voice. He didn't push openly. He did it with closeness, with attention, with favors that came with invisible strings. I had seen women get pulled into his orbit before, usually when they were new, usually when they were ambitious, usually when they mistook his interest for mentorship. Sometimes it stayed in the safe zone, just a little too friendly. Sometimes it crossed a line, and then somehow it was always the woman who paid for it. Carolina didn't know any of this, not yet. Or maybe she did and thought she could handle it. That kind of confidence can be real, and it can also be a form of naivety. The first week, people were kind to her in the way offices are kind. They offered her lunch invites that felt like auditions. They explained systems with a tone that implied she was lucky to be there. They watched her reactions the way people watch for weakness. She stayed smooth. She made no enemies on purpose, but she made them anyway. Attention followed her like heat. It showed up in the little things. Men walking past her desk too often. Jokes that suddenly had a flirtatious edge. Women correcting her for mistakes she hadn't made. Tasks being handed to her with the pretense of training, but the volume of dumping. I remember one afternoon, maybe day 8, when she walked to the printer and came back with a stack of contracts. As she passed the cluster near compliance, a man said something under his breath. Not loud enough for a complaint. Loud enough for a bruise. She kept walking like she didn't hear him. But I saw her shoulders tighten for half a second. That was when I realized how the office had already decided she was going to be a story, not a person. And stories in workplaces don't belong to the person they're about. They belong to whoever controls the narrative. I told myself to stay out of it. I had my own life, my own bills, my own careful stability. I knew what happened to people who got involved in workplace messes. They became collateral. They became targets. They became warnings. But I also knew something else. Silence always has a cost, and you rarely get to choose who pays it. The first time I saw Carolina and Mateusz together, it was so ordinary, it almost fooled me. He was standing at her desk with a folder in his hand, leaning slightly, speaking in that quiet, reassuring tone he used when he wanted someone to feel special. Carolina was smiling, polite, a little amused. She looked relaxed. He looked pleased. There is a particular kind of moment in an office when you can feel other people noticing without turning their heads. Like the air gets thinner. Like conversations in nearby desks go half a second quieter. Like keyboards pause and then start again with more force. That's what happened. Mateusz was careful. He didn't do anything that could be documented. He didn't touch her. He didn't stand too close, but he created intimacy the way some people do, with attention that feels exclusive, with a little private world inside the public one. Over the next couple of weeks, it became a pattern. He would find reasons to include her, invite her into meetings that weren't technically hers, ask her opinion in front of others, compliment her work, but not just the work. The way she handled a call, the way she stayed calm, the way she made things look easy. People noticed. and the office reacted the way it always does when a woman becomes the center of attention. They didn't blame him. They blamed her. They said she was ambitious, like ambition was dirty when it belonged to her. They said she was using her looks as if her face had been a deliberate strategy. They said she was naive, with a tone that sounded like a threat. They said she was playing a game, and if she got burned, it would be her fault for touching the flame. I watched it all with a tight feeling in my stomach, because I had seen this movie. The part where the man gets to be complex and the woman gets to be reduced. Carolina didn't help herself in one specific way. Not because she was reckless, but because she had a streak of playfulness that didn't understand the stakes. She liked banter. She liked that little spark of being wanted, being seen. I don't judge her for it. We all want to feel alive in places that can make you feel like a machine. One day, there was a team gathering in the break area. It wasn't official. Someone had brought pastries for a birthday. People stood around with paper plates and plastic forks, pretending they weren't watching who stood next to whom. Carolina arrived late, hair still damp from rain, cheeks pink from the cold. Mateusz looked up like a plant turning toward sunlight. He said something to her that made her laugh. She leaned in slightly, not in a scandalous way, just enough to show she was engaged. That was all it took. I saw Marta watching them with an expression that was part disgust, part hunger. I saw Ewa watching with that same calculating look, like she was already imagining the complications. Then came the moment that changed the temperature for real. Carolina, in that playful way, said something teasing to Mateusz about his seriousness. It wasn't explicit, it wasn't vulgar. It was the kind of flirtation people pretend they don't recognize until they need to punish someone for it. Mateusz smiled, but his smile didn't fully reach his eyes. I saw it, that flicker. The moment a man realizes a woman might think she's allowed to play with him. The moment his ego decides it needs to reassert control. 2 days later, the backlash began. It started with workload. Carolina suddenly got the messy assignments, the contracts with incomplete data, the clients who were known to be impossible. People framed it as good training. They said she was talented and could handle it. They said it with smiles that didn't match their eyes. Then it moved to information. She would be left out of meeting invites. Decisions would get made without her, and then she would be blamed for not knowing. Someone would move a file and then ask why she hadn't found it. Someone would forward her an email chain with half the context missing and expect her to solve the problem anyway. The office has endless ways to punish you without leaving fingerprints. Carolina tried to stay calm. She worked longer hours. She stayed later. She kept her voice even. She didn't complain because she understood something important. Complaining makes you look emotional, and emotional women are easy to dismiss. But you can only carry that alone for so long. The first time she came to me privately, it was near the end of a day when the floor had emptied. She stood at my desk with her laptop hugged to her chest like a shield. She didn't ask for help directly. She asked for clarification on a process she already knew. That's how women do it when they're trying not to look desperate. She asked questions that gave her dignity while letting me see the problem. I told her what I could. I said a few names carefully. I hinted at patterns without making accusations. I watched her face shift as she realized this wasn't random. She asked me, in a voice that tried to stay casual, whether I thought Mateusz had influence over who got assigned what. I didn't answer immediately. My silence was an answer of its own. She looked down and nodded once, like she had just confirmed something she had been trying to deny. After she walked away, I sat at my desk with a heavy feeling, because I had just stepped into it. Even that small exchange, even that small alignment mattered. In workplaces like ours, neutrality is seen as loyalty to the system. Choosing a person can make you an enemy. A week later, the nastiness got louder. Someone created a rumor that Carolina had been seen having drinks with Mateusz after work. Maybe she had, maybe she hadn't. It didn't matter. The rumor did what rumors are designed to do. It turned her into a story. It gave people permission to judge her as if they knew her. People started looking at her differently. Men looked at her with that half smirk, like her body was public property now. Women looked at her like she had stolen something from them, even if what she had stolen was just attention. And Mateusz, who had started this heat, suddenly acted cold. He stopped stopping by her desk. He stopped praising her work. He stopped including her. He became formal, distant, almost irritated, like her existence had become inconvenient. That's when I understood the real rule. His attention was a gift until it wasn't. Then it became evidence against her. Karolina reacted the way a lot of people do at first. She tried to fix it by being perfect. She became quieter, more careful. She dressed slightly more conservative. She smiled less. She stopped laughing at jokes. She tried to become invisible. But when an office decides you are visible, invisibility looks like guilt. The turning point came on a Friday afternoon when a major client escalation hit. One of those chain reactions where a delayed shipment becomes a financial threat, and suddenly, everyone is panicking, and nobody wants to own the failure. Karolina was assigned a critical piece of the contract audit, something that required access to a folder on the shared drive. She requested access in the system. The request sat there, unapproved, hour after hour. She emailed. She called. She walked over to the senior analyst's desk. She stayed polite, but her voice carried that strain you get when you're being blocked by someone pretending they don't hear you. When the client call came, leadership asked why her audit wasn't complete. Karolina said, calmly, that she hadn't been granted access. Eva's face tightened. Mateusz's eyes narrowed just slightly. The room did what rooms do when they want to protect power. They treated her explanation like an excuse. Someone said she should have escalated sooner. Someone said she should have found a workaround. Someone said she should have anticipated this. Karolina in that moment made the choice that sealed her fate. She said, still calm, that she had escalated, and she named the person who had delayed the access. It was true. It was factual. It was also a direct challenge to the informal hierarchy, the kind of challenge that gets punished regardless of whether you're right. The air changed. People looked at each other. Someone cleared their throat. Eva's expression went blank, which was how she looked when she was deciding how to distance herself. Mateusz spoke, not angry, just smooth, and suggested they discuss it later. Karolina nodded, but her eyes had that bright sharpness of someone who has reached the edge of restraint. After the call, I saw her hands shaking slightly as she closed her laptop. She tried to hide it by organizing papers, but I saw it anyway. Later that day, I found out the access had been delayed intentionally, not by the person she named, but by someone who had been told to delay it. The instruction had come from above the desk-level politics. It was a managerial move. And when I traced the chain in my mind, I could feel the shape of it. Karolina had become a threat, not because she was incompetent, but because she was visible and unprotected. Making her fail solved multiple problems. It punished her. It warned others. It gave leadership a scapegoat, and it protected the men who created the risk in the first place. When she chose the wrong man to flirt with, the backlash turned nasty. That sentence sounds simple, but what it really meant was this. She reminded a powerful man that he wasn't in control of her, and the system that benefited him corrected the mistake. By Monday, the story had been rewritten. People talked about the client escalation as if Karolina had caused it. They framed her as inexperienced, careless, arrogant. They said she didn't understand process, even though she had followed it. They said she lacked teamwork because she had named a blockage out loud. What they didn't say was that the blockage had been manufactured. Karolina started getting called into meetings she wasn't invited to prepare for. Eva would message her with vague requests. Come by when you can. Quick sync. The kind of language that sounds casual and feels like a trap. The first formal warning came disguised as coaching. Eva sat with her in a small meeting room and explained expectations with that gentle corporate voice that pretends it cares. Karolina nodded, took notes, asked polite questions. She was trying to play the game correctly. But the game wasn't about performance. It was about submission. After that, the social punishment intensified. People stopped inviting her to lunch. People stopped answering her messages quickly. People responded with cold efficiency, like she had become contagious. The worst part wasn't the silence. It was the way the silence made her look guilty. In an office, isolation is a verdict. I found myself watching her more than I meant to. I'd catch her staring at her screen too long without typing, like her brain was tired of trying. I'd see her walk to the bathroom and come back with her face slightly tighter, eyes a little too bright. And I hated myself for the way I calculated my own risk, because I did. I thought about my mortgage. I thought about my reputation. I thought about how quickly offices decide who belongs and who doesn't. That's how systems win. They make everyone a little cowardly, then call it professionalism. One afternoon, I was in the kitchenette when I heard two women talking near the sink. They didn't know I was there because I was behind the partition by the coffee machine. They were talking about Carolina in that half-mocking tone people use when they want to feel superior. They said she thought she was special. They said she came in acting like she owned the place. They said she probably slept with someone. They said it with the casual cruelty of people who believe they are safe. I felt my throat tighten. Not because I cared about Carolina's sex life, but because I knew how easily those words could be turned on any of us. I stepped out and the conversation stopped instantly, replaced by forced smiles and the sound of running water. I didn't confront them directly. I just looked at them long enough to make it uncomfortable. That was my version of bravery. It was small, it was inadequate, but it was something. A week later, Carolina made her second mistake, the one that wasn't about flirtation. It was about dignity. She filed an internal complaint, not dramatic, not emotional. A clean, structured email with dates, examples, and requests for clarification on process and access controls. She didn't accuse anyone of harassment directly. She didn't mention Mateusz by name. She framed it as workplace obstruction and hostile behavior. It was smart. It was also naive in one specific way. She believed the system existed to correct harm. The system existed to protect itself. HR responded quickly, the way HR does when they want to control the narrative. They set up a meeting. They thanked her for raising concerns. They promised confidentiality. Then they did what HR always does in offices like ours. They treated her complaint like a risk to be contained. Within days, people knew she had gone to HR. Not the full details, but the fact of it. You could feel it in the way people looked at her now, not just resentful, but wary, like she had broken an unspoken code. The office started using a word without saying it directly: problem, liability, drama. Carolina's access requests began getting denied for mysterious reasons. Her manager began documenting everything. Small delays became written warnings. Slight mistakes became evidence of unreliability. Mateusz, meanwhile, remained untouched. He became even more careful, which made him look even more professional. He stayed calm in meetings. He volunteered to support the team. He spoke about accountability with a mild, concerned expression. He was building his defense without ever having to defend himself. I watched him one day in a leadership huddle. He talked about team cohesion, about creating safe working relationships, about avoiding distractions. He said it like he cared, like he was a man who valued stability. And I realized something that made me feel sick. The system had turned Carolina into the distraction. Not his behavior, not the favoritism, not the power dynamic, her presence. When they finally scheduled the HR follow-up, Carolina came out of the meeting room pale, not crying, not shaking, just pale, like all the blood had left her face to keep her upright. She walked past my desk and gave me a small, tight smile, the kind that says I'm still here, even though I don't feel like myself anymore. Later that night, she messaged me asking if we could talk briefly. I agreed. We sat in the parking lot in our cars, engines off, winter air fogging the windows. It was quiet and ugly and real. She told me, in a voice that stayed controlled until it didn't, that HR had asked her whether she might have misinterpreted the workplace dynamics, whether she might be sensitive to normal feedback, whether her communication style could be contributing to misunderstandings. They hadn't called her a liar. They had done something worse. They had made her doubt her own reality. She said she felt like she was losing her footing. She said she was exhausted. She said she could see the trap now, the way everything she did became evidence against her. I listened. I didn't give her advice that sounded like a poster. I didn't tell her everything would be fine. I told her the truth as gently as I could. I told her she wasn't crazy. That sentence mattered more than anything else I could have said. 2 weeks after that, Carolina was placed on a performance improvement plan. The document was polished, it was full of neutral language and measurable goals that sounded fair: improve response times, reduce errors, demonstrate collaboration, communicate proactively. It was also a legal weapon disguised as coaching. When she told me, her voice was flat. She said she understood now what the plan meant. It meant the company wanted a clean exit. It meant they were preparing the paperwork to remove her without admitting wrongdoing. She asked me whether I thought she should resign. That question is the one that haunts people, not because it's complicated, but because it's cruel. It forces you to choose between dignity and survival, between leaving on your own terms and being pushed out in a way that stains you. I told her to document everything, to keep her own records, to protect herself. I told her to think carefully before making any move. I told her she deserved better than this. But I also knew what was happening. The office had already decided. The final incident was small on paper, which is how these stories usually end. There was a contract revision that needed approval. Carolina sent it up the chain. Someone didn't respond. The deadline passed. The client complained. Leadership called it a failure of follow-through. Carolina said she had sent it. She showed the timestamp. She showed the email. Mateusz, sitting in the meeting, said calmly that perhaps she should have followed up more aggressively. That was all. A sentence, a mild suggestion. And the room nodded, like it made sense, like it was reasonable to expect a new analyst to chase senior managers for approvals that those managers were paid to provide. Carolina sat there, shoulders tight, eyes fixed forward. She didn't argue, she didn't cry, she didn't shout. She just went quiet in a way that felt final. 3 days later, she resigned. No dramatic goodbye, no mass email, just a short note to her manager and a quiet removal from the system. Her desk cleared out by the end of the day, her access shut off by the next morning. People reacted the way offices react when a story ends. They moved on quickly. They made jokes about how some people aren't cut out for the pressure. They congratulated themselves for surviving. They acted like the discomfort had left with her. But something lingered. For me, it wasn't just anger. It was shame. Not the loud kind that makes you confess. The quiet kind that sits in your chest and shows up later when you're alone and you replay what you saw. Because Carolina had been new and wanted and resented, and none of it stayed professional. The attention that followed her became a weapon. The flirtation that seemed harmless became an excuse. The wrong man became a trigger, and the system did what systems do. It protected its own. After she left, Mateusz continued being Mateusz. He smiled, he mentored, he made small jokes, he held power like it was natural. Eva continued being Eva, competent and cautious, surviving by never becoming a target. Marta continued being Marta, resentful in ways she would never admit. Relieved the heat was gone, and I continued being me, sitting at my desk under fluorescent light, doing my work, feeling the cost of what I hadn't done. Sometimes I imagined Carolina in a new office somewhere, walking in with that same quiet certainty, hoping for something better. Sometimes I imagined her learning the same lesson I had learned the hard way, that in workplaces, attention is not neutral. It's currency. It's leverage. It's a verdict waiting to be written. And sometimes, when I caught a new woman walking onto our floor for the first time, I felt my stomach tighten, because I could already feel the air shifting around her. Not because she had done anything wrong, because the room was already deciding what to do with her.